For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. You can hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Happy to say we have a full four-hour show today. No day games today, so 4 hours with us. And we start college football tonight. We're a week away from the start of the NFL season. The Chiefs are putting up another banner a week from tonight. Royals, of course, still in action. No off days until next Thursday. So they continue this brutal stretch of games. And it did not result in a sweep yesterday. Like,
yeah, one getaway.
It was disappointing. Like, no, I'm not saying people shouldn't be disappointing. I'm not disappointed. I'm not saying that overall it wasn't frustrating to let a lead slip away. All that is true.
Very much so.
But at the same time, perspective, you know, you win 3 of 4 against the Guardians. You did gain ground on Cleveland. It was overall a successful start to this 20-game stretch. You're now 4-3 in the 20-game stretch. That to me, we got to look long-term with this. It's a short 28 games or whatever left, but still, it's not just about yesterday. We can't ignore how great the series was overall.
You have to. It's like the season, right? You better put it into at least a little perspective, or then you're going to be really pissed off. Because, yeah, they had a 5-2 lead late. Walker came back in for the seventh. Lead evaporated, or 5-3 lead. Lead evaporated. And then, yeah, Ursek didn't have his best day because he let some inherited runners score and let up his first ever earned run as a member of the Kansas City Royals. And then had enough gusto to get past the best closer in baseball, Emmanuel Clase, a man who has a point, I think, 4.9 or 3.9 ERA going into the day yesterday and came up short. But am I mad about the series? Hell no. They took 3 of 4 from the Guardians in their building. They're still a game back, a first place in the division, 2.5 games up in the division because the Twins lost again last night, 5.5 games up of the final wild card spot from Boston. So I'm okay. Like, they have plenty of games left to make up one game.
And the Yankees and Orioles both lost yesterday, I believe, too. So just in terms of even where you stack up among the top teams in the American League as well. I think what was so frustrating is like the sweep, you could taste it. You were so close.
It was like 5-2 and you're just like, they're hitting homers.
Get it. I mean, I truly get it. What was interesting was the discussion all centered around the seventh inning and what, how that all played out. We said going into the game that because of the taxed bullpen, how great it had been, only getting 10 and a third innings from the starters heading into game 4 of that series, that, hey, they were probably going to have to push it with Walker. They were going to have to get every bit out of him. And in this case, that meant putting him out there in the seventh inning. Hindsight is 20/20, trust me. Like, I talk about Dury vision and how I see better than ever before. We all see better than ever after a game happens. And
after
we're something,
after Yordano Ventura gives up the homer in the 6th of the wild card game. Sure.
So I understand that we're all guilty of doing that. But that to me was ultimate hindsight is 20/20 for those that were upset about how they utilized the pen. Remember the context of Walker needing to go deep in a game because the bullpen was taxed. You had Schreiber, Long, MacArthur, Hernandez all basically unavailable for the Royals yesterday. And Daniel Lynch had pitched 31 pitches on Monday, and he's still just adapting to a bullpen role. So I get why Q kept Walker in there. It didn't work, clearly. It unfortunately did not pan out. But I get the thought process. And then when he realized, you know, Ursek needed to get in the game, Ursek, for the first time in a Royals uniform, wasn't as sharp. It was some soft contact stuff. It happens.
Yeah, and that's, it wasn't even, I mean, it was soft contact. But that's the difference. We talk about that. When Ursek's at his best, he's going to get strikeouts. Like, that's what he gets. And so when soft contact goes in play, we've talked about this with James MacArthur a couple of times during the year, where if the ball's in play, you can be hurt by it. Doesn't mean they hit the ball well or saw you great or anything else. It just means they can get you if for some reason the ball is in play. The Waka thing, I think that this is probably a little bit, and I'll admit, the difference between the way we consume sports as a person who works in the media and has to watch every game and the way a casual fan might come in or out. Casual fans like, what the hell are you doing? Get Waka out. You must have 17 bullpen arms available to you under that situation. And in our case, you and I both knew that they'd only gotten 10.1 innings pitched total, 10 and a third out of three games in just 2 days. I want to remind you, the three games wasn't in 3 days. It was three games in 2 days. They were out of pen options because they were trying to avoid guys like Chris Stratton. They were trying to just get Waka through seven, get an inning of like long or an inning, like just get 2 innings out of the bullpen and buy their time. So no, I would tell you all season long, we made this point maybe a month ago, I would prefer Waka never pitch in the seventh inning. His ERA by inning, it is staggering how much worse it is in the seventh. He has a 2.25, 2.25, 2.25 in each of the first 3 innings. For some reason, he's got a 6 earned run average in the fourth. 2.86, 2.2 in the seventh, or in the sixth. And then in the seventh inning, Michael Walker's ERA is a staggering 12.60 after yesterday's outing, and it wasn't good before. So fine. Don't pitch him in the seventh most of the time. But in that game, when you'd already won three and used your bullpen, I don't actually think they had a choice.
Yeah, you have to understand the circumstances around it. On its surface, if you just box score watch and you're like, yeah, why did they leave him out there? I mean, but if you recall how the series had already gone, it made a lot of sense. And look, the move didn't work, right? They tried to push the issue because they kind of had to, and it didn't work yesterday. That kind of stuff happens. Now, if that was a...
Wasn't good defense in that inning either, by the way.
And also, even with the... If this was the wild card game, and it was game three, and you had to win it, well, then I'm sure Q would not have gone to Waka for the seventh inning. But it wasn't. I know these games feel like playoff games, and we're like, hey, you got to treat them like that. But that's just also not the reality with 28 games to go. And when you didn't have an off day coming today, now Thursday...
You don't have an update till next Thursday.
Yeah, so like all those circumstances is what led to the position of having to have Walk out there. But it's fine. Someone says, why are you guys defending the Royals? Here's what's fun. This drives me.
They're a game out of first place.
This kind of crap, I'll be honest, like I shouldn't let it affect me. It drives me crazy. When I hear people like, you know, oh, Q, he just doesn't know what the hell he's doing. You know, or someone yesterday, Urseg should never pitch the seventh. Like, can we just use our brains a little bit, please?
He's pitching the seventh.
Can we just use our brains just for a half second? I don't claim to know everything at all. There's a ton of stuff I don't know a damn thing about, all right? But can we at least be smart when we just throw out random stuff? Can we at least have some background knowledge? Saying Urseg should never have pitched in the seventh inning is just crazy. He had pitched 9 innings in that seventh inning this year for the Royals and the A's, I guess, going back to their time, and had a 0.96 ERA. Urseg pitches
technically his best inning by ERA.
He pitches in high leverage spots. He is not just a ninth inning guy. So that's just stupid. I'm sorry. And then the notion of like, how, you know, this team is flawed. We've all acknowledged that, but they are a game back in the division. This idea of like defending what, like, you know, you guys are too positive. That they are a game out of the division lead. They had the division lead yesterday, and they won 56 games a year ago. What do you want me to? What do you want us to be negative for the entire season? This has been a great year, and it's a great ride. We're acknowledging the situation, and I think if you look at why it was managed that way, it actually makes sense. Yesterday,
yeah. This is the thing I think we occasionally forget about in sports, which is, you can make the right decision and get the wrong result. Like, and that's what this is. This is the right decision and got a bad result. That's all. Bad result for the right decision. Okay, no big deal. Things happen sometimes. You lose a baseball game, and I can still take the big picture into play. Had you told me going into that series that the Royals would win 3 out of 4 in Cleveland, I would have taken it. 1,000 times out of 1,000, I wouldn't even have thought about it, Gold. And I'll tell you right now, had you put me in charge, I would have started Waka in the seventh, even though I wouldn't have loved doing it. Because I still would have trusted that more than, what if we let Chris Stratton pitch the seventh and then hope to get to Urseg in the eighth or the ninth, or hope to get to Steven Cruz or whoever else were available to you on that actual day, I'd take the risk. I'd roll the dice and I'd go that direction instead. And so unless there's some other shift in that, there's nothing wrong with the actual decision. The game yesterday was frustrating because they lost in a way they've lost a lot of times. The defensive effort, or I don't even, effort's probably the wrong way because I'm sure they were trying hard, but like the defensive ability and that inning and the final couple of innings of the game, shoddy. Kyle Isbell didn't get to a ball he should have gotten to. Bobby Wood Jr. could have gotten to a ball he didn't get to. There was miscommunication, runners on base who didn't need to be there. And then, yeah, Urseg, for the first time in his Royals career, didn't get one big out for you.
Coming up a little bit later on today, we'll talk with Vern, our Royals insider. Of course, he's in a busy stretch of the season himself, right? He's got the On Deck show coming up a little bit later on today as the Royals are in Houston to take on the first place Houston Astros. They look like they're going to almost all of a sudden now start to run away with the AL West as the Mariners have really, really struggled. So we'll get right back into the Royals. We're hitting everything today, man. We've got Chiefs a week away. We've got local college football starting tonight. We're getting into all that throughout the show today. Let's talk about the Chiefs, though, a week away. There was an interesting stat and trend around success and winning Super Bowls that with this three-peat campaign officially kicking off a week from now, I thought was really interesting. Travis Kelce, we all know, going to year 12, and he's going to turn 35 at some point later on this year. I don't know when his birthday is. You probably have a birthday song ready. I'm not sure. That one doesn't flow as easily.
Nick actually did that one, remember?
Oh, yes.
He stole my Patrick Mahomes
That's
song.
Right. That's right. We can maybe play that. But no November? Team. How crazy is this? No team, and this comes from Scott Kaxmar, no team has ever won a Super Bowl with its leading receiver in year 12 or later. Now, it's a very specific stat. I don't know how many leading receivers, how many guys qualified for this anyway, but no team has ever won a Super Bowl with its leading receiver in year 12 or later. No one has won with someone aged 35 or older. So Travis Kelce is both. It's another way for the Chiefs to possibly make some history here this year. Does that worry you? I just think it's an interesting stat. I also think there's a chance that he doesn't need to lead them in receiving this year anyway.
No, that's what really stands out. That is a bit surprising. I will say the Chiefs are really good at beating these stats. No quarterbacks ever won the MVP and also won this. It's been 45 years since a quarterback won the MVP and then won the Super. Patrick Mahomes did that. Nobody's on the cover of Madden and then wins this. He did that. Like, so the Chiefs are particularly good at destroying these stats. Like, this doesn't surprise me. No team has ever won a Super Bowl with their leading receiver in year 12 or later, or someone 35 years or older. Yeah. Have you seen the stats for 36-year-old wide receivers? They finished with like 300 yards. They stink.
So I'm saying, like, how many players really had a chance to do that anyway?
Maybe Rice?
Yeah.
Maybe. And then he was at the tail end of his career. As a reminder for this stat, the second leading receiver all time over the age of 40 years old is Tom Brady. Because he once caught a pass for like 10 yards. So this stat does not surprise me. The other part about this is going to probably surprise you because I have long since told you Travis Kelce will not age.
That's right.
I think he'll have another 1,000-yard season this year. So like I haven't even wavered off of that necessarily. I don't think he leads this team in receiving this year. I think Rashee Rice is leading this team in receiving this year. I think Rashee Rice, with the addition of Hollywood Brown and Xavier Worthy, stands to benefit the absolute most from the new-look version of their offense. He was third in the NFL in yards after catch his rookie year. It only stands to reason there'd be more room now. I think Rashee Rice is a 1,200-yard receiver this season. And as a result of that, I don't think this stat's coming into play. I don't think it's coming into play at all.
I don't. There's a chance it doesn't, but also it's not one that would concern me because you said it. We're not talking about just a normal player. He's going to go down as the greatest tight end of all time. So if there's anybody that can buck a trend, it would be Travis Kelce. You're saying that having the deep threat's going to help Rice. I agree. I also think it's going to make Travis Kelce's job.
Oh, it makes it easier too.
Yeah. And hopefully he's just not as beat up. And last year, we all know it was on Monday or Tuesday? We found out that he had the bone bruise. Yeah. So if he starts the season fully healthy, which is where he's at currently, that also bodes well. Last year, we know he could have had a 1,000-yard season if he played in week 18. He chose not to, which turned out to be a very smart decision. It's why he looked like a Hall of Fame tight end again during the playoffs.
Man, he looked rejuvenated.
He had 984. He had 1,338 the year before, 1,125 the year prior to that. And again, this stat is specifically talking about leading the team in receiving. What do you think the number, I guess you're saying you think Rice could. What do you think the number has to be? Does for someone, whoever the leading receiver is, whether you think it's Rice, Kelce, Hollywood Brown, I doubt it'll be him with the injury now, but it is up for debate. What's the number do you think it takes to get there? Is it 1,200? You think you have to, like, for this team, or are they going to spread it around enough that this offense
I think
so
1,100
good?
Would lead this team in receiving. Because I think Kelsey's like 1,000, but not like way over 1,000. I think Kelsey's like 1,050, 1,100 yards. So if you told me you got 1,115, I think this probably lead the team in receiving, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they need a 1,200-yard receiver, because if they're going to be as deep as we think they are, and just a much better wide receiver room all the way around, Travis Kelce, let's say he's around 1,000. We went through the numbers, how few teams have two or have three 1,000-yard receivers. You know, I told you before the Hollywood Brown injury, I thought he was going to have a chance to push that. I'm realistic about it. I recognize that he's missing a game or two or three at least, and so no longer do I believe Hollywood Brown has a chance to be a 1,000-yard receiver this year. I still think he could be a 700 or 800-yard receiver. Rashee Rice, I'm with you. I think he'll push 1,000. He was already very close a year ago. And the real question will be with Worthy. Is he a 500-yard guy, or is he a 800-plus? I tend to think it's closer to, I would take the under on the 750.5 for him. But look, the wide receiver room in leading it, I think it's going to be closer than we think. Like, I don't think someone's going to run away with it. I don't think Travis Kelce's having a 1,350-yard season. I think it'll be a bunch of guys in that 970 range to 1,200 range, and that's fine. That works. Nobody's complaining about that.
I think they have a realistic shot of having three 1,000-yard wide receivers. I wouldn't actually predict it. It's happened so few times in NFL history. I think you'd have to be a little too bullish. I also think you'd probably have to count on Hollywood Brown being available week one, out of the jump, no questions asked. And obviously that's not the case. So because he'd be the most likely to be the third guy to get 1,000 yards, Xavier Worthy, I mean, that's just like, you know.
I think Hollywood have to miss half the season for Worthy to have a chance to get 900
yards. Yeah, and even then, I don't know that I would necessarily predict that high of a number, because it's still a lot asking for a rookie wide receiver. But yeah, this stat, I get why it exists. I also just don't think it applies to the Chiefs.
Yeah,
I think it's such a small sample size, it doesn't apply to them.
913-586-7965. That's the text line here on 96.5 The Fan. Someone from the 913 says Kelsey's a tight end, not a receiver. Well, he lines up at wide receiver as well.
I did a whole bit on this show once.
And the stat is no team has ever had a Super Bowl with its leading receiver, not leading wide receiver. It's literally any, I mean, for the sake of this conversation, it could be a running back. It's not going to be, but it's not saying a leading wide receiver. It is a leading receiver on its team. In year 12 or later, no team has ever won a Super Bowl with that. So it doesn't have to, that's saying tight end, it's any receiver.
Just anybody
catches a football.
Because I'll be honest with you, there's probably a lot of bad teams over the history of the year that some 35-year-old Mercedes Lewis led them in receiving yardage with like 778, right? Like there's a couple of bad teams in there that had some sad old receiver, but also do 35-year-old receivers, are they still in the league most of the time? Like, that's the whole other part of it. Most of the time, they're not in the league anymore. Those guys are gone, washed, cooked, over with, gold. And if that's the case, then I guess I just don't worry about it. It just feels like such a small sample size, I don't have to care. Meanwhile, yesterday, the Chiefs made yet another move. You and I talked about the fourth tight end part. Turns out they also wanted four running backs. I know they're calling one a fullback, but they're lying to us. Yeah. You can call it whatever the hell you want. You clearly got four running backs on your roster, and that's fine. The guy you had wanted a week ago, Samaje Perine, who's apparently up for a potential trade opportunity, was just on the free agency thing. Cool. Back up. Good. Samaje Perine. It's hard to hate this move. It's a league minimum deal for a guy who can pass block on third down.
I'll be honest, I love it. You're right. I thought they were going to have to trade for him. They didn't have to even do that, so it's even better because they just got him, I'm assuming, on a vet minimum deal, and it's not official, so we don't know what the corresponding move is yet. They'll figure that out. But I think Samaje Perine is the McKinnon replacement. You know, it's also another veteran. We've talked about the unfortunate situation with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I told you, I'm fine with Carson Steele, of course, being the two, but I want some veteran presence as well to go with Pacheco in case there's other injuries, and I don't know if you can count on Clyde. This solves that a little bit. You want a third down back. And Samaje Perine, last year, guys, was the fourth leading running back receiving-wise in football. Think about that. Like, that's a huge asset to have in an Andy Reid offense if they're in a two-minute drill and they got to quickly move down the field and they want a running back that can stay on the field, help pass protect, but also be a guy that's available to dump off in the flat and have success. Perine fits that. Pacheco slimmed down. He worked with a wide receiver coach. I think we'll see him, but it also changes my feeling on his role in the receiving game. I think Perine is going to take that role fully by the time the season gets going a little, maybe not week one, but this is a really good signing. As you said, you can't really hate this one when you have a guy that had top five receiving yards of all running backs in football a year ago, and you got him essentially off the street.
I think it's Clyde insurance. And that's fine. Like, he might very well just take the job from Clyde, and then when they decide they want to get down to three backs instead of four, then they'll just have to make the decision going based on that. But this is Clyde Edwards-Helaire assurance. If Clyde was healthy, 100%, no questions, good to go, Clyde would be on this team and Samaje Perine wouldn't have been picked up. But if you've got some, like, massive expectations that Perine's going to have 1,100 yards from scrimmage, you're crazy. But he did have almost 700 last year. Because he's good in short yardage, catching passes in the short passing game. He had 455 yards receiving last year. He only had 287 the year before in Cincinnati, but they were using Joe Mixon a lot during that time. This is like the Jerick McKinnon one. He's a perfectly fine 28-year-old running back who was available on the street. This is exactly what we talked about doing to buy yourself Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
And basically
insurance. Half
of his catches, so he had 50 catches, as you said, Cody, for 455. Half of those, roughly 23, were for first downs. So third down back, can he get you an extra couple yards on a reception if the receivers are covered down the field? Can he be that safety valve as well? That's why it's great. So I don't know week one if he's going to have a huge role or not. You know, he's just jumping into the offense, but he's going to be a factor this year. I think we will be talking about him point this season. It comes up with a big time catch that leads to a 25 yard reception for a touchdown or sets him up. You know, it's a third and long and he has to dump it off on whether it's a screen or otherwise. This is a really good signing, and Chiefs fans know him pretty well, as you said, not only because he was in Denver a year ago, but when he was with Cincy, there were some big third downs that were frustrating to watch because they would dump it off to Perine and he'd find a way to get the extra 5 yards or whatever it was and convert and move the change for Joe Burrow and company. So
same thing really applies, right? You just need another guy because the short passing game should exist again, just like it did last year, but it should be more successful. There's no reason why the running back screen game, the running back short passing game, the 5 yard, and then just go run the extra three you need for the first down. All of those should be more in play than they've been for years. Because for the last two seasons, people have been standing pretty much on top of Patrick Mahomes, and you can't blame them. They've had no threat to go deep. It wasn't real. No one took it serious. And in truth, they shouldn't have. It wasn't a good deep passing game. So if they are actually successful at passing it down there to Xavier Worthy, getting the ball down there to Hollywood Brown when he's healthy, well, then we're probably going to be looking at a different version of the offense that could actually utilize running backs again. What a crazy concept. This is the other reason why I'm like, for fantasy purposes, I feel good about Pacheco's season.
See, I think this signing hurts him a little bit in fantasy, though, because he's going to lose out on some of the receiving yards if we're just talking fantasy football-wise.
Sure. Yeah, especially in a PPR league, it probably dings him a little bit. Because the other part of this is like, now what's Carson Steele's role? I mean, I think this works the same way it did with Clyde. It's one of them's going to be an inactive. So Samaje Perine or Clyde Edwards-Helaire, they're going to be a game day inactive. There'll be four on the roster.
Week one, I'm guessing Clyde will be active and Perine may not because he just joined, unless there's the health issues going on with Clyde.
But one of those guys won't be in there. But having watched the Chiefs running game with Pacheco for a few years now, it's fairly simple. Let's say they get 10 offensive drives in a season, in a game. Eight of those offensive drives are all Isaiah Pacheco, except for on third down, they sprinkle in the third guy, either Clyde or Samaje Perine. And then two of those drives are just full. We're giving Pacheco the old break, and Carson Steele gets those. That's how I actually think they'll utilize
the
running
backs. They've
kind
of done that before.
Yeah. And the same thing. On third down, Carson Steele will come off the field. Perine or Clyde Edwards-Helaire will come in. On third down, Pacheco sometimes will stay on the field. Sometimes he'll give a fresh back, and they'll just kind of mix and match based on that. It seems like a really decent group because Pacheco's one of the 10 best backs in the league based on performance right now anyway. Yeah. So you just need a little help.
And some people are like, oh, the Broncos were never going to trade, Perine to the Chiefs. They didn't even have to worry about it. He got cut, and the Chiefs picked him up right away.
And they like their guys. I think it's they like Estime, right, and they like Jaleel McLaughlin.
McLaughlin's their receiving back in Denver, yeah.
And so they just had some guys that made it easier to move on from a guy like Samaje Perine, which is fine. Good. Their loss is our gain.
We'll get back into the Chiefs throughout the show today here on Cody and Gold. Up next, though, college football for two of the local schools begins tonight, for all of them throughout the next couple of days. So what's actually happening? Are we getting our dream scenario of multiple local schools in the college football playoff? We'll tell you if we think that happens next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Or track pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Just getting started here on a Thursday. Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We'll get right back into the Chiefs, in particular this defense and the expectation. And it's the word regression, fair or not, with them. You guys can always hit us up on the 96.5 The Fan, Jay Staflin Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. But college football is here, man. It's going to be a great college football weekend. There's some
Can't
big
wait.
Games. For the locals, right, it's kind of a tune-up opportunity. Two tonight, you've got Missouri, of course, in action out in Columbia. They're taking on Murray State, where the Tigers are 47.5-point favorites. You got the Kansas Jayhawks at Children's Mercy Park tonight. Remember, they're playing their first two home games there. They took it on Lindenwood, where they're 44.5-point favorites. And then this weekend in Manhattan, it'll be Kansas State Wildcats, 37.5-point favorites against UT Martin. I have no interest
in... think those are going to be very good games. No, are you going to go to the Kansas game?
I got multiple things tonight, so no, I will not be at that one tonight. I have no interest in neither do you guys in actually breaking down anything with Murray State or Lindenwood or UT Martin, but I want to talk bigger picture with all three. We've acknowledged that all three of these schools have a path and that you can make a realistic case for them to make the college football playoff in the expanded
field.
Their win totals are higher for all three than we've seen before. Missouri over 9.5, over unders where it's set. Kansas over under 8.5. K-State over under 9.5. Let's start with the Missouri Tigers, who will take on Murray State tonight. They're the team that should have the highest expectation. They do.
They got the best quarterback, one of the best players in the country in Luther Burden. They've had more recent success as far as going deep into these seasons. They would have been in the college football playoff if it existed last year. Do we agree with that?
Yes. They're 18-1 to win the SEC. They're plus 175 to make the playoffs. They have the best odds of any of the three locals, and they should. I think Missouri is the best of the three. I don't think it's much of a debate in terms of getting into the playoff, right? That is going to be whether or not in the SEC in that schedule, they can make it through without having more than the two losses. That's what it's going to come down to. And I personally believe that they will be undefeated when they go to Tuscaloosa. And if that happens, that means they would not have skipped a beat against A&M, and they could afford to lose to an Alabama or an Oklahoma. They have a softer, by SEC standards, a softer schedule than they're probably going to have.
By SEC standards, baby soft.
It's going to be softer than they'll probably have for a decade, just based on the way the set, no divisions and all that. So Missouri, to me, is making the college football playoff. I bet that a long time ago, and I think it's warranted to have the hype. I don't know if they cover, I said, the 47.5 this weekend. That doesn't really matter. But I think Eli Drinkwitz gets this team to the college football playoff.
Okay, so if we're making predictions, I think it is kind of hard to assume it'd be the other way around. Other than I'll say this, for the same reasons it's hard to shake things for other loser franchises. This is not, take it easy, Missouri fans, I get it. But you know. You know that you're a cursed university. That it never goes your way. So when things look the rosiest, it is hard for me to not be like, this is all going to fall apart horribly. Because I've watched Missouri for a long time, finally get their hopes up, only to have them finish like 13th somehow in the college football playoff rankings and not be like the third or the fourth team out of the SEC. I think they're a little too good. I really do. And this is one of those jobs where I think at the end of the year, you're either going to feel even more confident about Missouri's decision to go with Drinkwitz and keep giving him a contract extension, or you're going to start asking yourself the question, which is, how can you recruit this well, bring this many teams in, have this good of a schedule, even a down Alabama year, right? You didn't even get Alabama when they're the number one team in the country when you have to go to Tuscaloosa. So your toughest game is actually less tough than it would normally be. And so if you don't go to the college football playoff this year, it's a massive disappointment. It just is. You should be there.
That's where the
bar is.
There's
no
at.
Reason.
That's where the bar is.
SEC, it's not a lost season, but you have failed in your goal because that's got to be your only goal. After that, it's just, you know, wins are wins, you know, whatever.
Course, yeah. Get to the playoff. Get in the dance, and it's a fair bar.
I think they'll get set.
They've set the bar themselves to their credit, to Eli Drinkwitz's credit, right? He has made that the bar this year by the talent and the type of season they had a year ago.
There's a new college football, 249 miles of college football podcast out today. And
perfect.
We go through predictions for my playoff and all that stuff. I think Missouri goes 11-1, and I think they're in. It's interesting, though, when you look at the schedule, the way that I see it panning out, them losing two games almost keeps them out of the playoff. I think they almost have to go 11-1.
I don't think
the two losses too,
10
right?
That's two.
No, the two
Alabama's,
losses.
I understand that, but I think the Big Ten gets three. I think the ACC gets two. I think Notre Dame makes the playoff, and then you got the Group of Five spot. There's four spots for the SEC. So then you're competing. It's Georgia, Texas, maybe Alabama, maybe Ole Miss, maybe A&M, maybe Missouri.
Not a big Texas guy.
I think Texas is making it, but I don't think they're going to be seated as high as some others do, at least.
So who do you have? Just curious, real quick. We were going through the schedule. We all agree it's a softer schedule by SEC standards. The big games on the schedule are A&M, Oklahoma, and Alabama. Do you have them losing both Alabama-Oklahoma games? You have them losing A&M? Where's the loss?
I'm losing to A&M.
That's the one loss.
Yep.
And then so lose to A&M, but beat Bama and beat Oklahoma. That'll definitely get you in the college football playoff if that actually plays out.
If you just beat one of those two.
And Alabama is.
And someone says Missouri's weaker schedule could be why they missed the playoff.
Exactly.
It could. I mean, but it also requires these other teams living up to their hype. Like, to Cody's point about Texas, like, yeah, if Texas is what some people think they are, then it's problematic. But if Missouri loses two and Texas isn't what we think they are and Ole Miss isn't, then they'll be fine still.
Well, if you look at the so if they go 10-2 and Ole Miss goes 10-2 and Texas goes 10-2, Ole Miss and Texas are getting in over them because the schedule is way harder for them.
I agree.
That's where I don't know. Like the leeway that they have for error, depending on the losses, because I don't have Alabama making the playoff. I don't have A&M making the playoff. If they lose to Alabama and A&M, they don't have one win that says, here's my signature win, committee.
No, but the committee loves S. Are you kidding me, though? They kept out a undefeated team last year. If you're 10-2 in the SEC, they will not care about your schedule. I am convinced anybody could go 10-2 in the SEC and will be in the college football playoff 100% of
the
time.
But as we did learn last year, you bring up the undefeated. As we learned, though, also with all this, the caveat, if somebody's starting quarterback gets hurt in the last game of the season, then it changes everything.
Florida State was in the ACC. So I think along with that same point, Clemson plays Georgia week one. If they lose two games and one of them is to Georgia, Missouri never played Georgia. So Clemson, technically, if they have the same record as Missouri, has a better resume than Missouri does because they'll have played Notre Dame, they'll have played Florida State. Missouri can't say they played anybody, at least right now on paper, other than Alabama.
All right, let's get to the other game tonight. As we mentioned, two of the locals in action tonight. Kansas taking on Lindenwood, 44.5-point favorites. Kansas, I mean, they haven't had expectations like this really ever. We all know that even the Orange Bowl year, nobody was thinking it was going to be that special of a season in 2008. This year, I hate to just make it so simple, but I think it is for Kansas. If you have them winning nine or more games, you think Jalen Daniels is playing in nine or more games, in he is staying healthy. It is that simple. It really, and it's a big question, and it's a fair question. How's the back hold up? Tonight, I think he'll play maybe one drive in the third quarter if the game's going the way I think it's going to go. And then they need Chris Ballard's son, Cole Ballard, to play a lot tonight. They do.
A ton.
They need him to play a lot because of the risk that exists of Jalen Daniels getting injured.
I'm not even kidding. I think the number of wins Kansas has this year is directly lined up to the number of games Jalen Daniels plays. As in, if he only plays 7 games, they're a 7-win team. If they play 8, he's an 8-win team. If he plays 12, they might be a 12-win team. He's good for 1 win every single time he's on the actual football field. Because that's the way it's been. If he plays all 4 quarters over the last year and a half, they win a football game. Plain and simple. They win all the games that Jalen Daniels pretty much starts and plays the entire game. When he's hurt, they're just not as good. And they had a better backup last year. So those losses are going to come quicker and faster.
Right, well, let me ask you this. Over under 7.5 games started for Jalen Daniels over. This year.
7.5 over.
If I had 8.5, would you still take the over?
No.
So that's the number. Okay, that's so it. Over under 8.5 is the number.
7.5, I think I would take the over. 8.5.
Actually, I'll take over 8.5.
Look, I hope nobody should be rooting for anybody to get hurt.
I hope he plays every game.
I hope he plays every game, but there is the fair conversation to be had. And, you know, I think it was Leipold joked that early in camp, like, you know, compare a little bit to load management, like in the NBA, you know, it's how they went through fall camp. Like, I'm concerned about it, for sure. I'm absolutely concerned about his health. I think for these first couple games, it'll be interesting to see how much they use him if they have a healthy lead, if they're fortunate enough to be in that spot against Lindenwood and Illinois and UNLV, and I hope they are. If that's the case, how much does he play these full games or not? Because knowing of the grind of the Big 12 season and how his back has been a problem. In terms of their win total, I will take the over. 8.5. They're a 9-win football team. I think that's where they're at. I have them as a 9-win team this year.
Well, I just told you I didn't think he'd play 9 games, so I take the under on that.
Okay. Yeah.
For betting purposes, but that's all Jalen Daniels health related. It's not my confidence in the rest of the team. It's my confidence in one player's ability to be on a football field. It almost their entire season boils down to that, because I think they got a lot of talent in other areas that they should be a 9 or 10 win football team, honestly, because if he plays a majority of the game, I think they're probably a 10 or 11 win football team. I think they could win the Big 12 if Jalen Daniels plays every single
game. I think it can be as simple as that. One interesting thing, in the red zone last year, they were like 100 and they were dead last in red zone points allowed, dead last in the country.
Ooh.
Defensively, they had some hiccups, and they are going to have to figure some stuff out if they want
positive
really,
regression. Though we talk about that all the time.
If they really want to be that team, I have them going 8-4. I think that there's a couple losses in there, maybe a surprising one, but it's too hard to say. Yeah, Jalen Daniels is going to play all the games, because you can make a case. Yeah, they're going to go undefeated. Or it's crazy how reliant it is on his health.
It is plus money on the over 8.5, by the way, plus 138. So the under is where you know, more of the money has been coming in on for the most part for the Jayhawks tonight. By the way, you mentioned the defense because of that, and because what we just said about Ballard probably playing a lot, but in a good way, they need him to play this evening. I do like the over 59 in tonight's game. All right, let's get to the game this weekend. Kansas State, their total. Over under 9.5. It's the same number as Missouri. It's minus 144 to the under. Avery Johnson, the hype is all there. We're going to find out if he lives up to it, because everything you hear out of Manhattan, this kid's the real deal. He's the real deal. We still haven't seen a ton of games as a starter in the league. I think Kansas State is also a 9-win team, so I'll take the under. So I think they're both 9-win teams. And ultimately, the Sunflower Showdown will decide who gets to play Utah, in my opinion, in the Big 12 title game in Dallas.
How Drew answers this is going to dictate whether or not K-State fans let him cheer for their team for another year. So think carefully, Drew, before you answer.
No, I've already got it predicted. I think they'll have an opinion.
I think K-State wins the Big 12.
Okay, there you go.
That's who I think wins the Big 12. Put it on paper, whatever. Yeah. That's a team. They have done a lot of winning under Klieman. They went to the Big 12 championship 2 years ago. They were 9-4 last year, so they fell short of expectations, I guess, a little, and were still a 9-win team. And, I mean, I've watched quite a bit of K-State football because we're here local. If Avery Johnson is what he's supposed to be, he's an upgrade. He's a definitive upgrade.
Of course. I mean, I think he's going to be for sure.
And I understand that, like, their quarterback from last year was good enough that he's now starting at another power conference in the Big Ten making real plays, right?
It's
not like he's trash.
And he'll be handing the ball off a lot to one of the best running backs in the country.
Sure. Yeah. But they were still good enough with letting him start for a team that has real aspirations this year. So it's not like he was a bad quarterback. I just think Avery Johnson is enough for the win. And I think that if you get to 10 or 11 wins, I don't think it's going to take undefeated. I'm a little more down on Utah than I was even a couple of months ago after talking to some people, because they have the same unknown at quarterback that K-State does, except for their upside's less good with their quarterback.
Except their defense can win them games.
Yeah, it can.
You know, that's the question
But has anyone ever won the Big 12 just being like a defensive bully?
Well, Utah's defense is one of the better defense we've seen in a while in the Big 12, I would argue. Look, I think it's a fair point. My only thing, and the reason why I don't have them, you know, ultimately getting to 10 or 11 wins is I think K-State's schedule is really tough. Drew, where are you at?
It's a lot tougher than Kansas is. I think there's one game to watch. It's not even a conference game. I guess Arizona is a non-conference game as well, but Tulane on the road, second week of the season. It's a tough game on the road. A little bit of a sneaker game because people might be looking to Arizona. I think K-State are going to play against Iowa State in the final game of the regular season. Iowa State's going to beat K-State to get into the Big 12 title.
Well, you have Iowa State making it to the Big 12 title game.
Hang on. K-State will have 11 wins at that time. So K-State, it's going to be back-to-back Iowa State-Kansas State weeks. Iowa State beats K-State to get into the Big 12 title game. K-State gets revenge and wins the Big 12 against Iowa State.
So you have them
in Dallas.
Interesting.
Iowa State and Kansas State are the two best teams. So you have them losing to Iowa State.
I didn't say they were the best teams.
So you have them losing to Iowa State in the regular season and still ending up with 11 wins.
Well, no. They have 11 wins at the last game of the season. They lose.
That's what I'm saying. So you have them winning 11 games.
No.
While still losing Iowa State?
Both go 10-2.
Gotcha. Oh, okay.
Their second win is two Iowa State.
I was like, the math wasn't adding up.
Math's not mathing here. Something's wrong. How many games above 500 are the Royals, Drew?
Here we go. I got you,
Drew.
Drew, buddy, dead to me.
You're not listening. Kansas State still predicted K-State to make the college football playoff. Makes the college football playoff. I think Missouri makes the college football. I forgot to say this. I think Missouri's in the SEC title game, by the way.
Ooh. So, yeah. I mean, look, out of the three, I think I'm more confident. It's weird. Missouri's a better team. I'm more confident they make the college football playoff than any of the other two locals.
Agreed.
But because of the conference, I think it's more likely that K-State gets in the conference title game because of the conference. There's no question.
Less competition to get in.
Well, if Missouri goes 11-1,
and I don't have them going 11-1.
I think they're in the game. If they go 10-2, they might be, like, if they go 11-1, which they could do with the schedule, they might just be in there. I have them seeded lower. Like, I have them as 11 seed.
Okay.
Even though they make the title game, because I think the committee's going to look at the schedule and be like, okay, Missouri didn't really play anybody like that. They're in, but other teams that might be better than them are going to jump them in terms of the seeding in the standings.
You can see why this is an exciting college football season ahead, because all three locals, you just heard, I mean, we all have different opinions on exactly to what extent. We all think they're good. At least winning eight every single one, some winning 10, 11. I mean, it's going to be a fun college football season. Two of the games get going tonight, obviously, throughout the season. You can hear K-State football on 96.5. The Fan. All right, let's get back to the Chiefs. You used the word regression when we were talking about one of the defensive units there with the Jayhawks. But how about defensive regression for the Chiefs? Is that fair? Because they were a top three defense. Naturally, you would probably say there's going to be regression. To what extent, though? You know, regression for the Chiefs and this defense, is it going from second or third to seventh or eighth? I think that's in play for them, and that's still a top 10 defense with an offense that we all think is going back to the top 10.
So I asked the question because we asked about offense, and we all universally agree that we think the Kansas City Chiefs offense is going to be better than they were last year. Of course they are. They were middle of the road last year in points per game, and I have eyeballs over the last 4 years, so I am aware that the Chiefs offense is going to be better than that. It's 100% lock it in. The Chiefs offense is going to be better. There's almost no doubt about it. I think it's a little more difficult on the defense because even though it's the same defensive line, which we've talked about, they are clearly less comfortable with it. The signings they're making, the way they're talking internally, they do not think their defensive line is good. We know their corners aren't as good. You think it was an accident? They went out and put waiver claims on two different corners yesterday, one of which ended up on their roster. They obviously don't like that unit as much as they did last year with L'Jarius Sneed, and no reason not to. But Trent McDuffie was the best slot corner statistically in football last season, and now he's going to have to play on the outside. So what do they do with the slot and at the number two spot? It's a question they're going to have to answer themselves a lot. I think they're regressing. I don't think the defense will be as good. It's the one part of the field where I'm going to tell you, I don't think they're going to be nearly as good. And the only thing that I think can save them is turnovers. The only thing that can keep the defense as a top five defense this year is turnovers. Because from a takeaway perspective, they were not good last year, as you well know. The Ravens were the best team in football at that. The Chiefs were the fifth worst. They only had 17 takeaways last year. So the only way to make up the positive regression we talk about is to take the ball away. So unless I'm confident they're going to do that, no questions asked, I think they're probably like the ninth or 10th best defense. I don't think they're trash. Like, I'm not crazy. I just think whenever they fall defensively, they'll probably make up for offensively. The question is, can they win that way again? Because it's been a few years.
Yeah, look, the number two cornerback is the question. And it was a question in camp that didn't get answered because, as we know, the coaching staff wanted someone to emerge. It didn't happen. And you're right. They made a couple claims yesterday. They clearly weren't happy with the depth. Now, I don't know. Both guys, they claim they got one of them. I don't know if they view that player as someone that's going to be a number two, or they just, as they did all week, they really added depth to the back end of the roster. You know, the guys like Juju Smith-Schuster, they added him. More of a back end of the roster depth piece. The signing of Samaje Perine, more of a back end of the roster depth piece that's going to help this team.
Sure.
So I think that's probably what the corner claims were. I don't think they think one of those guys is jumping in and being corner two right away, but they obviously felt one of those guys was a better option than Kelvin Joseph, who they cut
or whatever.
You know, I think it's more of that.
They're not going to like trade out Joshua Williams.
Joshua Williams will be the team's number two corner right away, but that is going to be an area teams are going to test, and they're going to have to prove that they can hold up there. It will be vulnerable, especially early on in the season, and maybe there's a surprise there. But what's the worst they fall back to? Like, if we're even just talking about
10th.
Okay.
11th, something like that.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would be stunned if they fell past 12. I mean, that would be a big, that would mean to me that
there was
an injury on the defensive line and they weren't getting near the production on the defensive line. Cause we all know, how do you make your cornerbacks look better? It works both ways on this one, but you get pressure on the quarterback. Suddenly you think your corners are doing an even better job or whatever.
The problem is you go back to where the defense was a few years ago, Gold, where I think they're going to have to rely once again on Chris Jones to probably play on the outside more than they want. Okay? I think, don't you? Like, I think Chris Jones is going to have to pay more on the outside than they had to do last year. Remember a couple of, what was it, two, three? How long ago? How long ago was that when they did the whole Chris Jones full-time defensive end thing and that just didn't work?
Like two, 3 years ago.
Two, 3 years ago? Like, I don't think it's going to go to that, but I do think they're going to have to use him out there more because their depth is at the defensive tackle position. So on third down, can Chris Jones do it from the new part of the field versus where he was previously? That I don't know. That will probably make a decision on whether or not you like him. But yeah, 10th, 11th, 12th.
Yeah.
The question is, what do you think the basement is of the offense this year?
Yeah.
Because could they be 10th in both? That's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned they were 14th. Someone said the Chiefs' offense was 9th. I guess it depends on what metric. We're going by points per game. They were the
14th. Points per game.
I guess we could dive deeper. I mean, if you're telling me yardage, that doesn't count. Points per game, they were 14th.
It's like, I don't care.
14th in points per game last year were the Chiefs offensively. So, yeah, they're going to be a top 10 offense again. And I think they have a chance to trend towards top 5, top 6.
You ever look back at that? You realize how wild it is? Like, we watched that offense last year. I'm like, I hate it. I was like, it's not even fun to watch anymore. They're just like throwing it 2 yards, and half that time it's going off of Justin Watson's hands or Kadarius Toney's into another team's hands. I'm like, this is an annoying offense, and I am not enjoying it. It is not fun to watch. You're here to tell me that there were 18 teams worse at offense than that one? 18? What the hell were you all doing? I didn't even enjoy watching the Chiefs offense. What the hell was the rest of the
They were
doing?
Starting Tommy My Cutlets. God. They were, you know, I mean, that's what was going on. There were teams starting Zach Wilson still last year in games. Russell Wilson was starting games. He's also going to start week one for the Steelers. That was announced yesterday. That's how.
That was a good, you guys, I love that decision for the Steelers. You know, I really hope.
I mean, I don't care.
He stinks, man. He stinks. Well, why are they talking themselves into Russell Wilson?
No, Justin Fields will be starting at some point this year.
I'm pretty sure.
And that's not any better either. Neither one of those quarterbacks will be starting for them a year from now. So it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't.
No. I mean, no. That's what really, yeah. But they should just tank then. They should just start Tommy Cutlets, win one game, and get an actual quarterback in there.
Tomlin won't do that. But I agree with you. As great as Tomlin is, in a weird way, they've been in this middle road of just, you know, being an 8-9 win team, and it's a terrible spot to be in.
From a quarterback perspective, it leaves you drafting with Kenny Pickett's. You know, like, or Kenny Pickett. I couldn't get his name right. I added an S for no reason.
It's like Chase Daniels.
Yeah. Like, I, you know, it's, that's not the guy you want. You know, it's not, none of the people who are currently on your roster should be starting quarterback for you 12 months from now. Well, then just lose and get a different, or you should have spent the money on Kirk Cousins and gotten a real quarterback in your franchise and finally got some winning. They could have just still taken Michael Penix Jr. and had a different quarterback starting for them. Everybody still wins in that scenario, right? So it's a little bit different. Yeah, just annoying. Just annoying. Someone says, God, no, please do not put Jones on the outside. You know, Occasionally it works. He does that anyway. It was when they tried to make him a full-time defensive end that it was a problem. And by the way, it wasn't even a problem like he wasn't effective at all. The problem was they were a sieve in the middle of the defensive line when Chris Jones wasn't there. They were exposed where he wasn't, I thought was the bigger issue.
Cody and Gold here on 96.5 The Fan. I'm noticing on the text line, 913-586-7965, people are just texting Drew names of teams they want opinions on. So, yeah, we're not going to go through everybody. Drew will respond. If you just text in a college football team you want his opinion on, just text in. Drew will personally respond to every text. Any team in the country you want an opinion on, Drew's got his college football guide. Is it coming out? Is it out yet?
It comes out later today.
Perfect. So you've got everything on every team. You just text in a team and Drew will respond back to you.
Rob is already pulling a text line and said, you have Iowa State.
I mean, I do think it's crazy. I don't think Iowa State's making it to the Big 12
title. Oklahoma State are going to disappoint. I think Utah's fine.
I think Oklahoma State will disappoint as well.
I think Utah's fine, but they're going to have a little bit of a wake-up call. Okay. I know the Pac-12 is solid, but I don't think they're going to... I don't know. I think the Big 12 is where... And this has been the conversation throughout. There's been so much chaos that can happen. The chaos is going to happen in the Big 12, and Iowa State will be in the Big 12 title game.
All right, so you can talk to Drew about any team you want on the text line. Up next, though, let's get right back to the Royals, and how are they stacking up right now with the other teams in the American League? Plus, we do have some business to attend to.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.